The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
You're all very welcome back. Yeah, that lasagna-loving Pine Martin was cracking me up for a lot of this week. So listen, it is time for our entertainments panel, and I'm joined by Gráinne Humphreys, director of the Dublin International Film Festival, and by radio producer Owen Sweeney, who have both joined me in studio, both in denim jackets and both in both in blue and white striped shirts. It's so cute, guys. It's great to see such synergy between you.
It's
both.
A WhatsApp group.
It was somebody got the note. But no, it is good. They kind of just look like kind of like happy convicts. But anyway,
we were channeling French.
Very, very French ahead of the visit by President Macron later this week. He'll be thrilled, guys. He will be thrilled.
My collapse are probably a bit much, though, in fairness.
It is a little bit much. But listen, let us go to the cinema what's out this week. Gráinne, Censor is out on release. All week long, I've been hearing 4 stars, 5 stars. And the tragedy is, because it's a horror, I'm not going to get to see it. So tell me, what is all the fuss? What's it all about?
I have to say, I mean, I'm really enjoying going back to the cinema. And this is a film that really works on the big, big screen. It's set in kind of Thatcher's Britain, and it's about Niamh Alagher plays a censor, very uptight, quite repressed, suffering from a kind of trauma in her childhood. And one day, watching one of the endless video nasties as part of her job, she seems to have a kind of, you know, connection to an actress who she thinks may be a long lost daughter. And it suddenly spirals like Alice down a kind of rabbit hole, where she goes after this quite reclusive director to find out more, and suddenly finds herself literally disappearing into the plot of one of these horrible films that she's normally in control of and that she cuts up. So it's a really clever, twisty, creepy film about the act of watching films and of viewing films. So it's perfect for
and
all of us
that
locked
role
up for
of
months.
The censor, they're kind of protecting us and saving us
exactly.
from the worst excesses, and yet she finds herself, as I understand it, in the middle of one.
In the middle of it. And, you know, what's wonderful about it, it's a first film by a woman called Prano Bailey Bond. Niamh Alagher plays Enid, one of our greatest actors. And she, from The Virtues, from Cam with Horses, she's also in Deceit. I don't know if anyone's watching on Channel 4. She's incredible. But the range she shows in this, from this woman who, as I said, is all about control, as you said, about protecting other people from this violence, and then suddenly falling into it and becoming part.
And is
it
really scary? Is it?
It
like,
is really scary. You see, the thing is interestingly, it has a cert of 16 on it, which I thought was funny that our classifier gave it a 16 because I was petrified. And Michael Smiley, the wonderful Michael Smiley, turns up as a really kind of creepy and disgusting kind of film producer. But I have to say, at that stage, I did burst out laughing. But it's brilliantly done. Production design, it goes from these greys and these kind of muted colours to full on kind of red and lurid colours near the end. So it on multiple levels, it's a really stylish, really intriguing film to watch. And as I said, something to see on the big screen.
Yeah, maybe I might be able to take my hands away from my eyes. I prefer life on the bright side, Owen. Tell me about the bright side.
Well, the bright side, you may not. It's quite heavy going, but it is well worth watching. It is directed by Ruth Meehan. It's her first film, first feature as director. I think this has kind of been on the burners, or the back burners, or all burners since 2014 or so. This is the story of Kate McLaughlin, who's a 35-year-old stand-up comedian who has, it's
played by Gemma Lee Devereaux.
Played by Gemma Lee Devereaux, most recently seen in Smother, as one of the daughters in Smother. One of the central characters, in fairness. Yeah, this is Kate McLaughlin. She's 35. She's a stand-up comedian. She has suicidal ideation. That is only kind of muted, I suppose, by the whammy of her breast cancer diagnosis. And then the film kind of ensues from there. It is there's one bit I just want to highlight from the start, kind of midway through the film. There's an overly made up woman who's giving the cancer patients a tutorial on how to apply makeup, etc., etc. And you kind of go, oh, that's Anne Gildea. And then it all kind of clicks into place, because the film was inspired by Anne Gildea, a stand-up comedian, of course, one of the Nuala's herself. Her cancer, or her memoir, but her, and in particular her cancer story, I've Cancer, What's Your Excuse, was the name of that book. And that's where Ruth Meehan got the idea. And Gemma Lee Devereaux is phenomenal in this. this film. She's brilliant. She's by turns kind of sympathetic, obviously kind of curious, kind of downbeat, indulgent, repellent. She can't help herself, kind of material coming out all the time. It's a great device as well to have a comedian. It's kind of a difficult thing to do in film as well. Kind of have a fake stand-up act, if you know what I mean. It's like having a fake band and having to write fake songs. So she's kind of tell jokes, but she is this character. It's almost kind of a narration, but there's no voiceover, so it's kind of, it's her facing off against the audience, but also talking to herself.
And
comedy is therapy as well, and kind of her way of kind of, you know, getting her inner thoughts out.
And it's got quite a stellar cast, including Tom Fahon-Lawer. So is it about exploring those relationships as she goes through her journey?
The journey doesn't take it quite where you think it's going to take in lots of ways, which is great, which is quite surprising. I mean, there is a road trip. They could also subtitle it, I suppose, apart from maybe the loneliness of the stand-up comedian. They could subtitle it the four types of women, or four women you meet in chemo, because there is a great supporting cast of actors. There is kind of the posh, upbeat, wheatgrass peddling woman. There is the kind of the older knitting religious woman. There is the older woman who kind of came out in life late, and there's the younger Marxist kind of angry woman, all played by Karen Egan, Barbara Brennan, Siobhan Cullen and Dervla Crotty. It's very female centred, as it should be. It is a film, watching it as a man, that men should not be made watch, but certainly will benefit from watching it. Tom Fahon-Lawer, he mentioned there, is kind of the prospective love interest. Kate's kind of, you know, her sexuality is kind of her shield in lots of ways as well. She's emotionally cut off until she meets him. But will it pan out? You'll have to watch it to find out. But there's a kind of a love scene, or a non-love scene, between the two of them, with kind of the trauma of surgery hanging over them all, and his own backstory and her future story. And it's quite an eye-opener. It's heartbreaking in parts. It's laugh-out-loud funny in parts. It's a hell of achievement, I think.
Wow.
It's well worth watching.
The next movie, Grandi, that you have, Sabaya, is heavy going subject matter too.
It is, but it ties into a lot of what you've been talking about already on the show in the treatment of women. Sabaya is actually the name given by ISIS to the Yazidi women that they've actually abducted from the Sinjar province of Iraq. They've used as sex slaves. And most of them are actually in the Al-Hol, I think, camp in Syria. Which is, you know, as we know, there's about 73,000, I think.
One of the most dangerous camps.
One of the most dangerous camps in the Middle East, and I'm sure probably in the world. But this follows two men, Mahmoud and Zayad, who run the Yazid Home Centre. And they basically, alongside with some fantastically brave women infiltrators, make rescue raids into the camp to get some of the women out. And it follows, it's a Swedish-Kurdish filmmaker who has a very strong connection to the area, who just literally follows them in with a camera. So it's an observational portrait of that, this very small, tiny kind of rescue mission. And you follow them going in with, you know, no lights and just a gun and I think a mobile phone, and pulling these women out. And, you know, in so many ways, there's car chases and it's incredibly tense. But there's other pieces that were heartbreaking to watch, where you see these broken women coming out. Out, nearly coming out into the light of the courtyard.
So is it sort of part documentary, part
film? It's a documentary. No, yeah. It's entirely a documentary. And he, you know, filmed this material, I'd say, with a very small crew. Wow. But he has a great respect for all of the women involved. And so you do feel and see a lot of their pain in this particular situation. But there's also a respect, I suppose, to, you know, they're not interrogated when they come out. You know, the camera often just sits and watches them as they kind of see
sometimes the
world around them.
Those films can be a really, really difficult but compelling watch. You've given this 5 stars.
Yeah.
So what is it about it that holds you through?
Because I think it's a hugely important story that I knew embarrassingly very little about. And I felt so connected to this particular group. The fact that they are two men who are going in with this group of kind of associates to rescue this group of women. The numbers are astounding. It's 206, I think, out of 2,000 who remain in the camp. And there are scenes where the women come out of the camp and they're there playing with Mahoud's young son that will literally break your heart. And it will actually stand up against any of the things that we'll talk about today, which are mostly fiction, you know. And it's that just immediacy that I think is just superb. And it's on in the IFI. I think it's on again this evening. And out. But again, just one of those, we know about this story and yet it's so hard to make it real and to make it connect with you. And this one, as I said, I watched it during the week and it genuinely had a huge impact. And I think that's where I'm, the five stars is nearly an emotional response as much as it is to the actual storytelling.
To the actual production. Both of you watched Netflix's, its big release kind of for August, The Chair. So what's the verdict, Owen?
Well, I think we might differ slightly on this, but what's it about? It is interesting. The backstory, I suppose, is it's the first of kind of the David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, who were the showrunners and creators of Game of Thrones, who both went to Trinity, I think, at some point, didn't they? Or at least they were here at some point.
You're starting a particularly dangerous place now,
well,
Owen.
Okay, well, there you go. Anyway, so they have signed this mega deal with Netflix. So this is the first kind of production out of it, written by Amanda Peet, a great actress herself, and starring Sandra Oh. It is set in the world of academia. Now, I think academia is a bit of a hard sell in terms of TV and film. There's a whole lot going on here. Sandra Oh has kind of ascended to the role of the chair of the English department of this fictional but prestigious Pembroke University. It opens in the snow. There's plenty of august, old-looking buildings. The first board meeting, or what would you say, kind of a school meeting that she chairs is full of plenty of old and august-looking superannuated professors who won't go. She's been handed something of a poison chalice by the dean, who wants to get rid of the three highest earners off the staff because they're not getting new enrolments, not getting new students, and their courses are, there's one called the Survey of American Letters, which contrasts greatly with the young African-American professor who's trying to get tenure. And now, if your eyes are glazing, your ears are even glazing over.
I'm not feeling the love for this at all.
Anyway, her class is called Sex in the Novel. And of course, there's loads of people going to that class. And why not? And all the touchstones of there, Herman Melville's discussed. It is kind of interesting from an English point of view, of course, our lecturing point of view, that, you know, kind of it's Chaucer, it's Moby Dick. These are kind of still the great white hopes of kind of, you know, traditional English literature, etc., etc. But, you know,
he's struggling.
He is struggling.
Can I tell you my favourite joke, though? Sandra Oh's character, she has this adopted daughter who she has got a kind of a fractious relationship with, but her dad, Sandra Oh's character's dad, only speaks Korean to her. Now the daughter, the daughter's favourite toy is a Hello Kitty, kind of stuffed Hello Kitty, and the dad won't let his granddaughter's favourite toy into the house because he's not over the Japanese occupation, which is, I think, the funniest moment of the series.
It's really good. It is really, really good. And it's great for a couple of reasons. It's jam-packed. It possibly bites off a tiny more than it could chew.
Small bit.
Right? But it is 27 minutes long an episode.
That is a plus.
And it really genuinely works as a kind of comedy, as a story about academia. It's brilliantly cast. He didn't mention some of the cast, but Bob Balaban's there. David Morse plays the dean. Oh. Holland Taylor, who was the mother in 2.5 Men.
JJ Plus.
Steals the show.
Yes. There they go. Yeah. They wear the same clothes. They have their own minds. Talk to me, Grainne, about The White Lotus, which is on Now TV. No.
Well, The White Lotus, I grew up and remember two very important shows. One was Fantasy Island. Do you remember Fantasy Island?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, with Tattoo. And then the other one was Hotel from the 80s with James Brown. This is a weird mix of this. So Mike White, who did Enlightened, apparently had a gestation project that was going to happen. And then suddenly during the pandemic last year, they said, we can get you the Four Seasons in Maui if you want to make this show. So he went to the Four Seasons and he did it. And it is a wonderfully dark satire about a group of obnoxious rich people going to a 4, 5, 6-star unrated hotel and the havoc they wreak on each other. There's a great line, I think, in Rosemary's Baby where someone describes the chocolate mousse as having a chalky undertaste, and that is the description of The White Lotus.
You're incredibly generous, Grainne. You give everything 5 stars, and actually everybody at home is quite cultured. I'm getting these messages in about just listen to your piece on Emily Bronte. It's a pity that her image isn't displayed on the racket wall of Kilkee, County Clare, rather than Che Guevara. That's from Una in Limerick. And then another one says that Derville, the father of the Brontes, changed his surname from Printy to Bronte. His brother in Northern Ireland remained to Printy and fought in Wolfetone's 798 rebellion. So there we go, lots of Bronte fans out there. You both, I think, have a chance to look at Phil Lynott's Songs for While I'm Away, which is going to be showing on this week.
RTE1 on Wednesday at 9:35 p.m. So check it out, tape it if you can't watch it live. This is another one. It's Emma Reynolds directed this. It's a familiar enough story, obviously, Philo's story, to a lot of people. And it's kind of hard, like when you're watching Irish dramas, that you know, it's made for an international audience, but it's a very almost personal story to a lot of Irish people watching it. Phil's story, we'd be familiar with. It doesn't quite go down, you know, the the sense of tragedy hangs over it the whole time, but she focuses on the music, she focuses on his songs, some great footage of him as a youngster as well.
And it's really beautiful.
It's absolutely really stunning beautiful. Put together. I mean, yeah, you know, it's very well edited and it's very well shot.
And like her last film, The Farthest, she has this incredible ability to make the stories sound like they happened yesterday.
That's
the
right.
contributions yeah. from all of the people speaking about him literally make you feel like it happened yesterday.
And it has Sarah and Kathleen, two obviously song titles of his, but obviously most importantly his two daughters, and Caroline's in there as yeah. well, who you not never, but you rarely hear from. So there's very little Phil, there's very little Philomena, his mother, who of course would be familiar to millions in this country, is kind of keeping the flame burning for her son for so long.
There was a lot
of interesting
excitement.
It's a new take on an old story.
Good, which is always good. There was a lot of excitement about Bill Murray being spotted this week on a bus to Mayo. Lost in Translation is back, Grainne.
It is. I mean, it's a film, it's a really interesting film on so many different levels. It kind of marked Scarlett Johansson's kind of transition from a girl to a woman. Mm. Bill Murray had been doing a lot of Wes Anderson films, but in a way he became the romantic lead. And I read something fascinating. I want everyone to watch it again, think about this, that Sofia Coppola, whose second film it was, wanted to remake The Big Sleep with Bill Murray playing the Bogart role yeah. and Scarlett Johansson playing the Lauren Bacall. And I thought, yeah, in a way that captures the kind of chemistry between the two of them, which is basically a story of kind of, you know, people lost souls in a Tokyo and hotel.
Lots of chemistry going on today, yeah. including with my little movie twins in front of me. Owen, sweetie, and Grainne Humphreys, thank you very, very much. That is all we have time for.